Roberto Taco Shop. Real Mexican food you like.
In Las Vegas, no one needs to remind you about Wednesdays at Roberto's Taco Shop. Indeed, it's a $1.29 chicken taco day. Ah, grande, juicy, crunchy taco. Loaded with hot, savory chicken, crispy lettuce, and mounds of cheese. All for just $1.29 each.
Roberto's Taco Shop. Real Mexican food you like.
Oh, yeah. I like what they've done to my Wednesdays.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Washington, D.C. I got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out.
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press. A show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one, time is running out. Number two, time is running out. Number three, time is running out. Number four, hang on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. By the way, I don't have much stuff in my ear. Oh, now. Okay, now I can hear. Great to have you with us. It is Monday. Hope you had a great week. I had a great weekend. I spent a good deal of the weekend down in Searchlight. And I kept looking for the boyhood home of Harry Reid and if there's some monument or something. No, there's not. But we had a great time. Danny Tarkanian. Running for Congress in District 3, he's been working rural communities, and he was in Searchlight yesterday. And wouldn't you know it, he was making a speech on a basketball court, an outdoor basketball court, and we were there with the first responders, with the volunteer fire department, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of this whole thing, their radios go off, and they sprint about 20 yards to the volunteer fire department place where all the trucks are, and off they go. And there apparently there was a fatality shooting near the city hall in Searchlight. And so they went off, and I never saw them again. And so, I mean, that shows the dedication. So our congratulations to the volunteer fire in Searchlight. They did a great job yesterday. So, anyway, Monday being Monday, joining us as he does every Monday, a citizen soldier, a columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, good guy, parent, loving spouse. He is Victor Jakes, three-time-a-week columnist in the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
What? So when do you go off again for the reserve?
I have drill this next weekend.
Okay. So you give up 1 weekend a month.
Month. But I have to say, I am a short timer. So I am,
are you really?
I am getting out at the end of the year. So,
end of the calendar year, you mean?
End of the calendar.
All right. Okay. There's so much to talk about. We are down to, what, 23, 22 days, something like that, to the election. By the way, just a quick note. I know a lot of times you hear us talk about this coming Saturday, the 20th, as being the day when you can start early voting. But in Searchlight, it's only one day. And in other communities, so check and make sure in your community where you are living when early voting begins. But for instance, it's only on one day, 24th, in Searchlight. I learned that yesterday.
Good to know. That is. I mean, if you're in those outlying communities, definitely find out when you can vote and go vote.
The president just landed in Florida. There were people making much of his going out to, and I don't even know where it was, Topeka, Kansas, wherever it was, and holding a rally a day or two, as the hurricane was coming ashore and wreaking havoc on the panhandle of Florida. You have any problem with him going out? And I mean, he had thousands of people standing outside beginning at 7 a.m.
Well, I think this idea that, you know, the government doesn't function unless the president is right there is a little ludicrous. You know, the other problem is that, you know, if the president comes, all of a sudden there's a bunch of logistical hurdles that have to go in place. And if a storm is hitting, I think it's important that the first responders be there and be focused on, you know, doing what they can for the storm, not having to worry about and in some ways deal with the president coming. And so I think, you know, I think our nation can walk and chew gum at the same time. And so if the president's in Kansas, I think there are plenty of dedicated, talented folks in Florida who obviously were doing their best to try and mitigate the damage.
And the president, we understand, am I right, the president's coming back to Nevada?
He's coming back on Saturday. He's coming to Elko. So if you're in Elko, you can go to the president's website and reserve tickets. Or if you're wanting to make a road trip, he will be there Saturday.
Can you explain the dynamic? And I know you've been at a number of these rallies. You don't go to all of them, but you've been at enough of them. Talk a little bit about, for those that have never been to a Trump rally, what's it about? What's the energy about? What's the vibe about?
Well, I think the vibe is twofold. One, you're seeing the president of the United States. I think that is always something. Powerful person in the world, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. But obviously, Trump has a significant personal following. I don't want to say it's a cult like following, but you know, there's people who are attracted to Trump as a personality, as a leader, for political reasons. And he also is a great showman. I mean, this is really Trump in his element. This is how he won the presidency, was going around and doing these rallies. And he basically does a stand-up comedy routine for an hour or so. And the hope, obviously, is it fires people up to go vote, because that's, you know, that's what it all comes down to at this point.
Well, and I don't know where he will land, but for those of you that are at an airport near Elko, there is nothing more majestic than watching Air Force One touch down. And by the way, the other thing at the rally itself is watching as an assistant comes up on the stage and puts the presidential seal on a blank podium. And all of a sudden, you know the president is next. That's really cool.
Yeah, that absolutely is. And I confirmed over the weekend that Air Force One can't actually land in Elko. So there will be no road trips through rural Nevada.
They can?
They can. Apparently, President Bush came in 2006 to Elko, and Air Force One landed then. So Air Force One
Is there an Elko International Airport, or is there...
There is an airport. I don't know how much traffic it gets. I don't know much about the Elko Airport, but apparently it can land a 747, which means it's got a big runway. And, I mean, that's going to be quite an event. We'll see how much of Elko they can jam into one place.
Let that be a lesson to all you smaller communities out there. If you're going to build an airport, make sure it can accept to 747, because then you'll get a visit by the president. Well, not guaranteed, but pretty darn sure. More Victor Jakes coming up in a minute. I'm Kevin Wall. So good to have you with us. It is a Monday, brand new week, live and local now. Nancy Pelosi is trying to take over Nevada. Do I have your attention? Hey, Kevin Wall here with a very important message for all Nevadans. If you want to stop Nancy Pelosi and elitist out-of-state liberals from invading our state, you've got to get out and vote for Danny Tarkanian. Danny is the Trump-endorsed conservative candidate for Congress. He's a fighter, offering real solutions for Nevada families. Solutions like school choice. Danny believes that you as parents deserve a say in how your tax dollars are spent and which education system is best for your children. And Danny will work hard with President Trump to finally secure our borders. For our safety and security, it's an absolute must. In Congress, Danny will strengthen our country and our state by supporting the America First agenda that's already making America great again. Congress has been broken for a long time, folks, and that's why we need Danny Tarkanian's common sense approach. He'll get things done in Washington. I urge you to do the right thing for Nevada and for America and support our friend Danny Tarkanian for Congress.
I'm Danny Tarkanian, and I approve this message paid for by Tarkanian for Congress.
I am Andrew Patterson, owner of Patterson Custom Homes, and I am a client of City National Bank. A couple of years ago, my business was growing rapidly, and I needed a line of credit. But the bank I had been with since I was 2 years old saw me as just a number, and they stonewalled me. So I spoke to Mike Kilbride, a business partner of mine, who has hooked up utilities at every one of the homes I've built for the last 17 years.
My name is Mike Kilbride, and I referred Andrew Patterson to City National Bank.
Mike explained that City National is a relationship-based bank where they care about the individual. Less than a week after I met with the bank, I moved over all of my accounts, personal and business, and it was the easiest transition of my life. I have built over 170 custom homes, and that would not have been possible without the personalized service that City National provides for my family and my business.
The people you trust City National. Visit cnb.com to learn more. City National Bank, an RBC company. CNB, member FDIC.
Two men, two different paths. Las Vegas politician Steve Sisolak started as a telemarketer, hounding Nevadans with calls during dinner. Then he became a politician, first a university regent, doubling tuition prices on Nevada students. And later as a Clark County commissioner, where Sisolak was called corrupt by a judge, investigated by the FBI. Sisolak has reportedly handed out government contracts to his Las Vegas contributors. Then there's Adam Laxalt. Laxalt served our nation in uniform, volunteered for Iraq, taught at the Naval Academy, became America's youngest attorney general. Laxalt tackled opioid abuse, prosecuted elder fraud, fought for our local land and water rights, and has successfully led the way in protecting our constitutional rights as Nevadans. Sisolak and Laxalt, which one for governor? Sisolak, who has always looked out for himself, or Adam Laxalt, who has always looked out for you? Paid for by Laxalt for Nevada.
This is an important voter alert for anyone who doesn't want Nevada to turn into California. If you want to protect your gun rights, your parental rights, even your rights to use a plastic straw, check out Dennis Hoff. Dennis is a conservative small businessman running for the Nevada State Assembly. He signed the Taxpayer Protection Pledge and is dedicated to making Nevada, Nevada again. Check him out at DennisHoff.com. That's DennisHoff.com. Paid for by Friends of Dennis Hoff.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
All across the state of Nevada and in SoCal, too, it is live and local now. Good to have you with us. Want to thank again our friends out in Searchlight. We had a great time, and it was really a lot of fun. And there are some great, very patriotic people there. I want to say happy birthday to Hugh. Hugh turned 83 yesterday, and we all sang happy birthday. It was really a lot of fun. It's a good down-home community. And it was so much fun to see those people. And by the way, they listen to this show. Yes, they listen in Searchlight. We love that. Thank you to everybody, to Kim Colton and Billy and all the people that helped to set up. In fact, you know who I met? This is really weird.
Who?
I met... I was standing with a young lady named Kim Colton. She's a volunteer fire person, a small business owner in Searchlight. And I said, Guess who I met the other night? I met I saw Bob Beers. I saw Bob Beers at a function, and he's going to be our next treasurer. And she says, "Well, you know, my dad is the former treasurer, Stan Colton, back in the '80s, early '90s. Yeah, before both our times."
Before both our times.
I know. So, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. I want to ask you about debates. You wrote about debates over the weekend. By the way, Victor Jakes is a three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. What are Democrats afraid of? During the primary, they were all gung-ho. We want a debate. We want three debates. We want town halls. And then all of a sudden, you know, people like Susie Lee and Jackie Rosen, they don't want any part of it.
Yeah, it was so funny. I mean, right after the primaries were over, the campaigns of Rosen, Sisolak, and Lee fired off letters saying we want three debates, and then they kept, like, you know, bringing up these news releases like, oh, Republicans haven't agreed to our debates, and then Republicans started accepting debate invitations from media organizations, which is who, you know, hosts the debate, and then all of a sudden Democrats were like very silent.
Crickets.
and they only ended up agreeing to do debates on Channel 8, which has a politics program that's hosted by Steve Sebelius, who used to be a liberal columnist. And my conclusion was basically, you know, Democrats are unwilling to do debates without the security blanket of a moderator that they know agrees with them. And I think Sebelius does a good job. You know, he asks questions and gets out of the way. But I think it's
and
very
he did the Susie Lee, Danny Tarkanian, what was it, Channel 8?
Yep, exactly.
And even the Tarkanian camp was reasonably happy with the way he conducted the debate.
Well, I mean, I think the key thing for a moderator is that the moderator does not become the show. I mean, no one watches a debate to see the moderator. I think the key influence of a moderator is, you know, what type of questions are asked. You know, this on Friday, we're going to see a debate between Heller and Jackie Rosen. You know, Jackie Rosen voted for sanctuary cities. Are we going to get a question on that? You know, if you had a different moderator, maybe. You know, Jackie Rosen voted against the Born Alive Infant Survivors Act. Basically, if a baby is born alive after a botched abortion, the doctor has to protect that baby because now it is a baby. We all agree on that. You know, Jackie Rosen voted against that. I think those are questions that should be raised, but you're probably not going to see in that upcoming debate. And anyway, so I think it'll be telling. It'll be nice to see Heller and Rosen exchange ideas. But you know, it's also telling that Democrats are not going to go do a debate where there's any sort of connection to potentially someone who's not a liberal moderator.
So in other words, they want a liberal controlling the debate.
Yeah, and again, that's not to say that Sebelius is intervening and arguing with the Republican, because I don't think that happens. But it's just funny.
And just so we know, that did not really happen. It was a pretty civil
thing. Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, I think, you know, he asks the questions, he lets them respond. That's what the moderator is supposed to do. But it's just very funny, because if Republicans had this standard of, oh, I'm not gonna do a debate unless the host agrees with me, we would not have had presidential debates ever.
I keep wondering why guys like on a national level, why Hannity and Mark Levin, they never get asked to be on these panels.
I know it's
Did
so,
you ever notice that?
It's so funny. I mean, you get the, I mean, basically, I mean, just the media's liberal bias, another example, but the Republicans basically get kowtowed into accepting moderators who are liberals or are left-leaning, even if they're straight news reporters and try their best to, you know, to be straight about stuff. So it's just very funny how Republicans will bend and Democrats just feel like it's almost like they're entitled to a moderator who agrees with them, and they can't handle the thought of that not being the case.
I guess my question is, what would a debate look like with Rush Limbaugh as the moderator or Mark Levin talking about the Constitution as a moderator?
Yeah, I mean, I think the role of the moderator, though, is not to be the combatant. You know, you don't want the moderator debating the person. But I think what you do want is, you know, is the question about abortion, per se. Is it the question, do you support abortion in the cases of rape and incest? Or is the question, do you support abortion, late-term, partial birth abortion? I mean, because those, you know, what the liberal moderator will do is they'll ask, well, what about abortion in the case of rape and incest? And they'll never bring up, well, what about late-term partial birth abortion? And that's the issue where, you know, Democrats are on the wrong side of that issue, well, morally, obviously, but also politically. I mean, 80% of the American public, some vast majority, does not agree with Democrats on partial birth abortion.
Which brings us to another question, though. The president went into enemy territory, CBS, and 60 Minutes last night, being interviewed by Leslie Stahl. And I keep telling these people, I keep telling every candidate I know of that's a Republican or a conservative, why do you go on programs like that when you know? Why do you go, for instance, why does Amy Tarkanian go on MSNBC? You know you're going to get that liberal tripe, and the questions are going to be loaded, and it's going to be four libs versus one conservative, and they're going to be picking on you. Why even do that? Is it smart for the president to go on 60 Minutes when you know most of the questions are going to be negative?
Yeah, I do think it's smart. I mean, you've got to reach outside your own base, and I think it's good to engage with ideas that, you know, that butt heads against your ideas. I think that where you have to be concerned is, you know, are they editing it to make it look like something you didn't say? I mean, so
and 60 Minutes, unlike some shows, like panel shows or where you go on a show and they're live and they're not edited, 60 Minutes is a heavily edited show.
Yeah, and so to me, that's the balance. I mean, if you can go in and you have a chance to say your piece, and even if the viewers can just see that you're just being run over because there's 4-1 and they're never letting you talk, I don't think that's bad. I mean, I think that shows that you're willing, that you believe in your ideas and you have confidence enough in why you believe in what you believe. And I don't want to. I didn't see the interview, and I don't know if he was taken out of context. I'll just assume he wasn't. And so, if you have a chance to go on a show, you know, every once in a while, I think that's good. I think that's what the president should be doing. And I think that the concern is not, oh, they're going to ask you tough questions, or they're going to ask you questions that are slanted. It's, are they going to skew your answers when you don't have control? I mean, that's why you don't go on The Daily Show, because they'll just make you look bad. But if 60 Minutes wants to have a conversation where they have a chance to let you, you know, answer the questions, even if they're skewed questions, I think it's a good thing to go on those shows.
Early voting begins on Saturday in most places around the state of Nevada. In Searchlight, it's on the 24th, one day. We're going to talk in our next segment about where we are as we hit the home stretch. And it's hard to believe, but November 6th is not just right around the corner. It's actually here. We're going to talk about the races, the statewide races. We're even going to talk about some of the questions, because a lot of people are asking me, how are you going to vote on the questions? And I'm honest with them. On some of them, I'm absolutely positively sure. On others, I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up. Victor Jakes joining us, as he does every Monday, live and local now.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
It's live and local now. Victor Jakes, three-time a week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us as we get our Monday started. Elizabeth Warren, I guess, took a DNA test, and she does have a sliver, very small sliver, of Indian blood. Does that surprise you? The president called her Pocahontas,
right,
and kind of mocked her because she doesn't strike you as looking like a Native American.
Rightly mocked her for claiming to be Native American to advance her career as a Harvard law professor. And now we find out that she may have 3% Native American. So one of her great, great, great grandmothers or grandfathers was Native American. And anyway, I think Pocahontas is a great nickname for her. And I look forward to her fellow Democrats bringing this up in the primary.
No, seriously. Do you think that this will come up with Democrats?
Oh, it should. It absolutely should. I mean, it speaks to honesty. That's what it speaks to, is that she was willing to to lie and say, oh, I'm a Native American. Remember, she said that her parents had to elope because, you know, one side was so concerned about all this Native American in one of her parents. And so it's just completely ludicrous. And she lied. And this DNA test is, I think, only going to, I guess it will kind of be a test on if you view her positively and say, well, look, there's 3%. And if you view her the other way, you'll just say, look, what a total fraud. I mean, she's not Native American. She did this to advance her political career. And citing a cookbook where you put down a recipe, that does not make you Native American.
I want to bring you back to local politics, because we got some great races that are going to be contested. I was in Searchlight yesterday with Danny Tarkanian, big race with Susie Lee. We find out that Susie Lee isn't just a philanthropist, but she's been taking money. Her cause has been taking money from the school district. I think it's like $1.6 million that could be going towards teacher salaries, hiring new teachers, lowering class size. But it went to Susie Lee's foundation, or her charity, if you will. Should that be the role? Should that be the role of the school district? I mean, I thought it was the other way around, that philanthropists give money that can go to the schools.
Well, I mean, it certainly is not a philanthropic effort when you're taking money from the school district. What I think is happening, and I haven't dug into it, but the schools now are providing what's called these wraparound services, where basically they're becoming like the family for these students. And that's kind of a whole nother discussion about, you know, the breakdown of the family, and if, you know, is the school responding to a legitimate need, or is the school just enabling parents to say, well, the school's taking care of it, so I don't need to take responsibility. And I tend to think, you know, the focus needs to be more on how do we empower the parents, not just how do we come in and basically, you know, do everything the parents should be doing. But what I think is happening is a school is basically contracting with her organization to provide those wraparound services. So, I mean, it's certainly not something that's illegal, but I mean, certainly not.
But that's money that could go towards teachers that schools are getting out of the, the core mission. And the core mission should be to educate, to teach language, to teach math skills, to teach critical thinking skills.
Yeah, no, I think there's it's a mistake for the school to become kind of the pseudo parent. But what the argument is, and what's kind of, you know, predominated in some sectors in public education is basically, look, kids can't learn when they're hungry. You know, how can they learn when they're coming to school without, you know, the right clothes or the right shoes?
But but isn't that the role of parents?
Well, yeah,
to feed your kids, to clothe your kids, to put a roof over their head. That's the mission. When you first conceive a child, you're signing on to 18 plus years of feeding, clothing, educating, and the schools, you know, give them breakfast, they give them lunch, they give them, a lot of them, they send a backpack home with food at night and on weekends. Is that the role of schools?
Well, no, I don't think it is. And I think what's so funny is, you know, we have these very generous welfare programs where you get more money if you have a child, and then all of a sudden the school is providing three meals a day. It's like, where did the welfare money go? Like, does no one in the government talk to someone else in the government and say, well, if we're giving the parents, you know, welfare or TANF, and the kid's coming to school hungry, like, this is a deeper problem than just, oh, there's no food, or the parent has money, and why isn't that being used to care for the child?
Let's talk about the races. Danny Tarkanian, Susie Lee. We have just both candidates are up on TV now, and both are doing either directly or indirectly through third parties, doing some pretty hard hitting ads. What do you make of that race? Is it as close as everybody says?
Well, I think it's going to be close. I mean, if I had to guess, and I haven't seen polling on it, I would think that Lee is probably a little bit ahead. And I think it's still a winnable race, depending on, you know, basically how many people turn out, right? It is literally all about turnout at this point. And so if Laxalt does very well, maybe he helps pull Tark over the finish line. But the challenge is that Republicans, you know, nationally, this has nothing to do with Danny as a candidate, but their weakest demographic are basically white women. And CD3 is full of white women who generally, you know, historically have leaned Republican, and then because of their distaste for the president have really, you know, started leaning Democrat. Susie Lee, obviously a woman, that becomes a factor for. And again, we're talking about the marginal votes here, right? We're not talking about the 40% of people who are always going to vote Republican or 40% of people always vote Democrats. We're talking about the people who are not very engaged. They're going to start engaging right now, and their impression of the president is really going to matter. And the president's negative impression among white women is going to hurt. It's going to hurt Danny, and I think that's one of the things that gives Lee an edge.
We have seen nationwide a so-called Brett bump, the Kavanaugh bump, after the shabby way that Democrats treated him during the confirmation hearings, and really treated Dr. Ford. They did not treat her well either. That a lot of people, and we've seen it in national polling, generic ballots and things like that. In fact, I saw a poll where the president, his approval ratings are up 5% since August, just since August. Is there going to be a Brett bump out here in Nevada?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, compared to where things were a month ago, I think you're certainly going to see Republican voters more fired up. And you have to contrast this with, you know, Democrat voters were already fired up. I mean, they already had a very high enthusiasm level. And this, you know, this certainly brought Republicans to at least on par with Democrats in terms of enthusiasm. And Nevada is really unique because the Democrat turnout in non-presidential years really takes a pretty dramatic drop. You know, Republicans kind of, you know, have a more steady turnout. And so that's what's going to make it close. Even though Democrats have a 70,000 voter lead, the fact that they turn out at a lower percentage is really going to make these statewide races close and give Republicans a chance.
Okay, so you say Susie Lee, although there's not a lot of public polling out in the CD3 race, that she may have a slight lead, and again, it'll turn out essentially on turnout.
Yeah, it'll matter. I mean, I think Danny's got a chance. He's absolutely got a chance in this race. But, you know, what's funny is when you've got these voters who kind of just engage on the big races, things that happen with the president, things that happen in the Senate race, the governor's race, they can have all these down ballot effects, even for a congressional race, which is a big race. And we saw that really hurt Danny, I think, 2 years ago when the top of the Republican ticket came out against Trump. And even though Danny was strongly in support of the president, I think a lot of voters, you know, that turned off a lot of Republican voters. And I think that really, really cost him.
Let's talk about the gubernatorial race. Steve Sisolak and Adam Laxalt. Interesting race here. There's no woman in the race, so it's mano a mano. What do you make of this race, and does anybody have an edge going in?
I think Laxalt's got a slight edge. The public polling's been very close. I mean, that's basically where the public polling is, and I tend to think that Laxalt's money advantage, he was up on TV much earlier, really is gonna help him. It's kind of put him in the driver's seat, and Sisolak is up on TV now. Obviously, he's raised probably a significant amount of money, and there's been a lot of third-party money, so it's not like, you know, it's not like there weren't ads for him, but I just think, you know, Laxalt did very well in the rules 4 years ago, and he's worked very hard in the rules, and so I give him the edge. But, you know, a lot can change. We'll see what happens this week.
Are they having debates?
They are not having debates. So Laxalt agreed to a debate hosted by the Review Journal and Channel 3 that would have aired in Vegas and Reno, and Sisolak waited like 6 weeks to decline it. And then said he would go on Channel 8 and do a debate hosted by Steve Sebelius. So no gubernatorial debates. And again, just a very close race.
What do you make of that, though? When people are wanting to be able to compare candidates side by side. And the best way to do it is put them on the same stage and have them debate. In the larger context, what does that mean for our democracy, our republic?
I mean, I like debates. I mean, I think it's important for voters to get a chance to see it. But, you know, at the end of the day, one of those two guys was going to win the governor's race anyway. And, you know, so I don't feel like it's this big, you know, like democracy shaking effect. You know, there's plenty of ways to engage with candidates. I mean, I think the challenge is.
But that leaves us at the mercy, essentially, of 30-second attack ads.
Yeah, and not only that, it leaves you at the mercy of the press asking questions about Sisolak. I mean, I've asked these questions of Sisolak, but we do not know where he is on right to work, repealing right to work. how in the world is he going to pay for his all of his spending when he's promised not to raise taxes? Hint, he can't. I mean, he literally cannot. Collective bargaining for state workers, he at least has said that he supports. He said he wants to ban assault weapons. What does that mean? Is that a ban on semi-automatic weapons? And so when you're in a debate, those are the kind of clarifying questions that you can bring up as even the opposing candidate and say, look, what do you mean by this? Because this is a big deal. I mean, if you are proposing to ban weapons here in Nevada, potentially including all semi-automatic weapons, that's something that should be an issue. And that's something that Sisolak's really been able to avoid in large part because the press will not ask him these questions.
Okay, CD4 race, Crescent Hardy and Stephen Horsford, kind of the rematch, so to speak. Talk a little bit about that race, and I know very little about what's been going on out in CD4.
Yeah, the interesting part of that race was basically the congressional Republicans announced that they were going to go in for Hardy, which was obviously a big boost for him. But he's down, I think, like 9 in registration, somewhere like 9 to 11 points, which makes it a pretty tough race. And so I think what was happening is the congressional Republicans thought, you know, outside groups will go into Danny's race because the registration is so close, and that is going to be a close race. But unless we go into Hardy's race, no one else is really going to give him support. And so they've run some really brutal ads on Horsford. You know, he after he lost, he moved back to D.C. and became a lobbyist. You know, and that's a good attack. I mean, that's a truthful attack, which is always nice to say.
He says it's untruthful.
That he wasn't a lobbyist?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's an ad, I think, that's running that says that.
I mean, he went back and worked as a lobbyist. So I haven't seen that ad, so I guess I'll have to temper my statement. But, I mean, he moved back to D.C. His kids are enrolled in D.C., so he came back here once Kuhn. I mean, he did not ever expect for this seat to come open. He thought Kuhn would just hold the seat for, you know, until Kuhn left, and he was just going to go get rich in D.C., which is fine. I mean, go do that. And I don't think, you know, being a lobbyist, you know, disqualifies you by any means. But it's, again, those late engaging voters who aren't really up on the issues, they hear, oh, lobbyists, and are kind of turned off by that. So I still think Horsford's got an edge. I mean, what happened 4 years ago was such a fluke in terms of Democrats just not turning out. And they've got a Senate race. They've got the anti-Trump sentiment. They've got the governor's race. We're going to see a much better Democrat turnout than we did 4 years ago.
And by the way, if you just joined us, the president is coming to Elko on Saturday.
Yeah, that's big. I mean, that's a great boost for Heller, obviously. It's a great boost for Laxalt. I don't think Amadei needed the boost, but, I mean, certainly that's going to help him. But, you know, that rural turnout is very, very important. You know, if Heller and Laxalt get over the finish line, in large part it's going to be because they ran up the score in rural Nevada.
And, by the way, it just so happens, what a coincidence, Saturday is the first day of early voting. I just thought I'd mention that. I want to get to Dean Heller and Jackie Rosen. And again, they're only having one debate, right?
This Friday, yep.
And will it air live? Is it going to be a?
Yes, I think it's airing live on Channel 8 in Vegas and whatever the CBS station is up in Reno. I want to say it's Channel 2, but I could be wrong.
Okay. The everybody's asked me about the questions. Marcy's Law, and explain what Marcy's Law is as far as rights to actually victims.
So it's a victim's bill of rights. Basically, it gives a bunch of rights to victims of crime. This passed the legislature almost unanimously, and because it's hard to vote against a victim's bill of rights. But I think there are reasons to be concerned. I mean, when you look at, you know, this is when people talk about, oh, the right to health care. You know, as conservatives say, well, where does that come from? You know, because if you're talking about giving someone something, then it has to come from someone else. And I think there's big reasons to be concerned about putting really vague, undefined rights into the state constitution where they can't be changed. What does the court do with that? And I think there's a difference between, you know, wanting to help victims of crime. Obviously, everyone wants to do that. And then just throwing like a dozen rights into the Constitution without really understanding what do those mean. You know, what do those do to police reports? Are media organizations like Review Journal going to be able to get police reports if crime victims have a right to privacy? That's a real concern.
It does seem like it's somewhat open-ended, and it's not very precise.
Yeah, and that should concern every conservative, because if it's not very precise and you're giving just these broad rights to a group of people, you're leaving it up to the courts, and we know how that turns out. It does not turn out well for conservatives. So I think there's reasons to be concerned.
No on question three has spent about, NV Energy, I guess, has spent $30 million trying to get us to vote no.
I mean, they could have bought the governor's mansion and all the legislature and the Senate seat. They really would like to continue to be your monopoly energy provider, which suggests to me that they're making a lot of money off of you.
Well, let me ask you, though, and I'm leaning towards voting yes, only because I view monopolies as inherently bad. They're just not good for consumers. They're not good for anybody except the people that have the monopoly.
Yeah, the people who are spending $30 million telling you how terrible it would be to vote yes on question three. I mean, to me, the thing that does it is you go to the strip casinos, they employ really smart people who spend their whole careers figuring out how do they save the casinos money, and those casinos are spending over $100 million for the privilege of leaving NV Energy. $100 million just to buy a product from someone else. And if we can get that for free.
One casino, who was it that spent $40 million as an exit fee?
I think MGM spent like almost 80. I mean, it was crazy. Maybe Caesars was around 40.
What do they know that the rest of us should know?
Well, that there's energy cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is cut through all the rhetoric, cut through all the posturing, look at what the people with the money are doing, and they're paying money to leave NV Energy. I'd like to do that as well.
Yeah, and you should have that opportunity. So no on three. Five is the other one.
Yes on three. I would say yes on three.
You'd say yes on three, and I'm leaning yes on three. Five.
Five is the automatic voter registration. This is when you go to the DMV right now, you can register to vote. This would basically, you go to the DMV, they are going to register you to vote unless you say no. The biggest concern about this is there are 21,000 legal immigrants in Nevada who have a green card and get a driver's license because they want to drive, not because they want to vote. This will automatically register to them to vote, and I just think that it opens the door up for election fraud, even unintentionally. I mean, when you're at
and
the
we're
DMV,
seeing this in California right now.
Yeah, the California registered 1,500 immigrants, basically as a mistake, supposedly they say, you know. But when you start taking away safeguards and just automatically registering people to vote who are not eligible to vote, that is not a good thing for election integrity.
And six is the energy,
the renewable 50%. Portfolio standard, 50% by 2030. I mean, this to me, the paradox of question six is this. The proponents say, well, this is going to save everyone money because renewable energy is so much cheaper. And I say, well, if that's true, then we don't need a mandate because we'll just go buy it because it's cheaper. So to me, question six, if what the proponents say is true, then we don't need question six. So I think I recommend a no vote on that.
We will talk again next Monday. We'll be that much closer to an election. We'll be in the midst of early voting throughout much of the state, although, as I mentioned, in Searchlight, it's the 24th for early voting in Searchlight. Thank you so much. Always good. Have a great week, my friend.
Thank you, too.
Victor Jenks, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us live and local now.
I am Jim Marchant, and I'm running for re-election for Assembly District 37. I will vote against any effort to raise your property taxes, against allowing Nevada to become a sanctuary state, against continued efforts to violate your Second Amendment rights, and against school districts being able to levy taxes on you. This is the most critical election in our history, and it is very important that you get out and vote for candidates like me that believe as you do. I am Jim Marchant, and I humbly ask for your support and vote. Paid for by the committee to elect Jim Marchant.
Nevada candidate for Governor Steve Sisolak wants to prevent you from protecting your home and family from criminals. Sisolak is following the lead of radical anti-gun Senator Dianne Feinstein, whose newest assault weapons ban includes most of the handguns and semi-automatic rifles Americans use to protect them and their families. In fact, Feinstein said if she could, she would ban all guns. And Steve Sisolak is following her lead. That's why anti-gun groups like Everytown USA, funded by Michael Bloomberg, have poured millions of dollars into races for candidates like Sisolak this year. Sisolak's agenda is simple: to ban semi-automatic firearms, allow government bureaucrats to seize your guns without any court hearing, and maintain a government list of every American who owns a gun. That's why Gun Owners of America is proud to endorse Nevada Attorney General Adam Laxalt for governor. Adam Laxalt will defend the Constitution and your right to protect your home and family from criminals. Paid for by Gun Owners of America.
Do you want to earn a higher rate of return than you're making in the stock market? I'm talking about beating the market year after year. Hi, I'm Greg Herline. If you want to make more tax-free income, call me today at 888-738-1764. I specialize in helping people make more tax-free income with an IRA-approved retirement vehicle. And best of all, it's approved by the IRS. So what are you waiting on? Call me at 888-738-1764 and take control of your financial future with tax-free income. Call me at 888-738-1764. The consultation is absolutely free, so call me at 888-738-1764.
Horizon Trust Company is an independent passive custodian and is not associated or affiliated with and does not recommend, promote, or advise any specific investment opportunity, investment company, or any agents, employees, representatives, or other of such firms or entities. Investments are not FDIC insured, offer no bank guarantee, and may lose value.
Take control of your financial future. Call 888-738-1764.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? Hey, Kevin Wall here. I'm happy to inform you there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. There are no networks, so you choose your doctor and hospital. Liberty HealthShare allows you to easily decide how, when, and where you will access healthcare. It could be the best practical, moral, and economical choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family, that's mom, dad, and all kids. This is the way healthcare should be. For information, call 855-585-4237. That's 855-585-4237. Or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. And regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
Hello, my name is Richard MacArthur. I'm running for re-election in Assembly District 4, which is in the northwest part of Las Vegas. I have lived in Las Vegas for 38 years and want Nevada to be a good place to live and work, raise a family, feel safe, and be able to start a business. I support lower taxes, limited government, the right to keep and bear arms, school choice, and voter ID. I'm opposed to sanctuary cities and amnesty for illegals. I humbly ask for your vote in the general election in November. Again, Richard MacArthur, Assembly District 4, paid for by the committee to elect Richard MacArthur.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
It is live and local now. Good to have you with us. It is Monday. Coming up, Julio Rivera will join us. He is the editorial director for the Reactionary Times. We're going to talk about, you know, we were talking about question five and motor voter, essentially, opting in versus opting out. We'll talk about that more live and local now. Hey, Kevin Wall here. I trust Adam Laxalt to protect Nevada's identity and our values as governor. As attorney general, he protected us from sanctuary cities and threats to free speech. His opponent, known as Shady Steve Sisolak, was called corrupt by a judge for trying to give government contracts to political cronies. He claims every tax is on the table and plans on raising our property taxes. As governor, Adam Laxalt will keep Nevada prosperous and free and keep us from turning into California. Early voting begins October 20th, paid for by Laxalt for Nevada.
In Las Vegas, no one needs to remind you about Wednesdays at Roberto's Taco Shop. Indeed, it's a $1.29 chicken taco day. Ah, grande, juicy, crunchy taco. Loaded with hot, savory chicken, crispy lettuce, and mounds of cheese. All for just $1.29 each.
Roberto's Taco Shop. Real Mexican food you like.
Oh, yeah. I like what they've done to my Wednesdays.